محمد، اللهم صل وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. Over the course of these nights, alhamdulillah, we got pretty far. Personally, I didn't think we would get this far, so alhamdulillah for that. What were we talking about? Talking about how Ashura wasn't just a fight between two sides, one being the bad guys, one being the good guys. You have to be more, I don't want to use the word like this, but you have to be a little more academic when it comes to understanding Ashura. If we're going to have that love for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that love has to be combined with some understanding of why he did what he did. And if it is understood properly, we said that it will be like a string that connects many beads together. Ashura comes and pulls that string out from lots of beads, and these beads will scatter. And that's what we're after. Lots of the things that happened before Ashura and are seen as justified and legitimate, with Ashura, their legitimacy is undermined. It goes to the side. But this calls for some proper, major, analytical discovering and delving into the literature that's out there in this regard. And over these nights, we've been very critical, at the same time being very respectful of the other side, because we are after dialogue. Our leaders today, our ulama today, they're telling us that that's what we need today. Dialogue. And I heard that just today or yesterday, last night it was, we had another blast in Quetta and we had some shuhada there. Recited salawat for their souls. So there was different steps that led up to Ashura. These were the major ones, of course. There are some other ones that we didn't talk about that much, but these are the main ones. It started with the seed. We spoke about how this tree of Bani Umayyah that Imam Hussein, through his sacrifice, had to chop down, had to uproot. This tree, it wasn't a tree from the beginning. It was planted as a seed first. And it wasn't even in Bani Umayyah's hand for them to plant this seed. Others planted it for them. Others watered the seed. Others gave fertilizer to it. Others made the surroundings and environment of this seed suitable for it to grow. So a seed was planted. That was Saqifa. We talked about that. And how Bani Umayyah is standing back watching, oh my God, you guys are doing this for us, thank you. So after Saqifa and this seed that has been planted, that this seed wants to turn into Bani Umayyah, the tree of Bani Umayyah, the environment for this seed is also made suitable. How? By the prohibition of recording a hadith and transmitting a hadith. So no one knows about the Ahlul Bayt, no one knows about what the Prophet was all about for 100 years. Right now, if I say something, 2 days later, sometimes people will talk about, well, what did he mean, what did he say, and there's going to be a difference of opinion on what he said. We're talking almost 100 years. It's no joke. Moving on. That environment was made ready for Bani Umayyah in the future to be able to put up to par with Bani Hashim. What came after that? Watering the seed. During Abu Bakr's time, Umar's time, Banu Umayyah, if they came to power, a little bit of power was given to them. Yazid bin Abi Sufyan, then he died. Muawiyah bin Abi Sufyan is given power. This power is limited. Slowly it grows during Uthman's time to the extent that all of greater Damascus and Syria is under his control. But still he's a nobody. He's one of the tulaqa. People could care less about him. But then all of a sudden, the 6-person council takes place. Right, I'm going through the stuff we've discussed before. 6-person council that I said our Shia youth have to learn these things. They usually haven't heard these stories before. 6-person council takes place. All of a sudden you see that the khilafah and power and authority is given to Bani Umayyah, because Uthman is Bani Umayyah. And to make things worse, he makes many mistakes in his life. And I cited the sources from our brothers of Ahlul Sunnah, the moderate ones of course, not the extreme ones, of how Uthman made many mistakes and Bani Umayyah were ruling the whole Muslim empire, and then the assassination of Uthman takes place as a result. Now Muawiyah is sitting here, he's thinking, wow, it couldn't get better than this for me. Thank you, O Muslim Ummah, for messing up so much. and allowing this seed that you yourselves planted to start growing more and more and taking root more and more. So now this seed is cracking open. It's growing. The water was given to it, a little bit of power to Muawiyah. Muawiyah starts using this, and Uthman, all of a sudden, who is assassinated, becomes the reason for Muawiyah to stand in the face of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salatu wassalam. And we spoke about how it doesn't matter if Muawiyah is a Sahabi. Sahabis have different grades, different levels. You can't stand against a first degree Sahabi like Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, or Ali ibn Abi Talib, of course, according to their standards. How is it that Muawiyah is able to do this? Very cunning, very cunning. Uthman is my cousin. I am after his blood and avenging his blood and retaliating for his blood. Ali ibn Abi Talib, I want you to give me his killers. Ali ibn Abi Talib says, how can I give you the... First of all, we don't know when things like this happen. We don't know who did what. Bring witnesses at least. No. Ali, give me the killers. Fitna will break out. Problems will arise. Disunity, division, bloodshed. Give me the killers. I want to give you bay'ah. Ali, you were chosen by the people. I want to give you bay'ah. I just can't. Because let me first, you know, get this off of my chest that my cousin of Bani Umayyah was killed, Uthman. This becomes the excuse. All of a sudden, Muawiyah, who's a nobody, becomes a somebody. Because of the somebody-ness of Uthman. Sometimes you're a weakling and you start messing with somebody. And that person's like, dude, I will destroy you in a second. Then all of a sudden you hold your big brother's hand. All of a sudden this weakling becomes a strong person because he's holding the hand of somebody strong. Same thing happens here. And that's where Battle of Siffin takes place, and we talked about all this, and now we're going to continue. What happened in the Battle of Siffin? Battle of Siffin is not one of those steps towards the tree of Bani Umayyah growing and Ashura happening so the tree goes down. Something that took place in Siffin is the next step towards the growth of this tree. This is important, brothers and sisters, again. That once again, it was luck, not the skill of Muawiyah. It was luck, again. So Muawiyah, so far, out of these 6 or 7 steps that we've gone so far, the only time Muawiyah employed a little bit of skill was where? When Uthman was assassinated, finished, and starting up the Battle of Siffin. But still, the tree isn't going to grow unless you take the boulders and obstacles out of the way of this plant that wants to break out of the ground. A big stone is in the way by the name of Ali ibn Abi Talib. The next step is to remove this stone. To let this plant for the first time come out of the ground and breathe. So what happens? As a matter of fact, sometimes I think to myself, the Battle of Siffin was good actually. Good thing it happened. Why? The Muslims and the people on the side of Amir al-Mu'mineen, his army, were this close to finishing and ridding the Muslim Ummah of the nuisance of Bani Umayyah for good. Maybe Amir al-Mu'mineen would not have been able to have such a chance if Muawiyah hadn't started a fight. The same way the Prophet couldn't do certain things with those around him, because this unity is the most important thing when it comes to the survival of a religion, the survival of a people. Here, Amir al-Mu'mineen can't fight Muawiyah, remove him, although he knows he's a nuisance. But Muawiyah himself puts himself in a situation where Ali ibn Abi Talib now has the chance to destroy him, and he has that chance, and he has that power. That's why the army of Amir al-Mu'mineen gets this close to destroying Muawiyah. They say Malik al-Ashtar alayhi rahmah. He gets this close to the tent of Muawiyah and he's about to finish the job. It's almost over, alhamdulillah. What happens though? Once again the Muslim Ummah messes up. Step number six, tahkim happens. What happens? Tahkim, arbitration. All of a sudden, Amr bin al-As, this Sahabi, once again, we have this problem of Sahabi. And I've discussed this in depth over the previous nights, those of you who haven't been. We're not going to get into it anymore. there's different groups and different approaches to this concept of Sahabi and how high a Sahabi is. Amr bin Al-As, he comes up with a plan. He says, Ali, I know these people. Muawiyah, I know Ali's people. I know what we're supposed to do. What do we do? We're going to mess around with their emotions a little bit. And it's interesting how every time you see people messing up today, it's because they rely on their emotions more than their intellect. As I said, we are going to follow my marja 364 days. The 365th day, that one day I'm not going to follow. Because my emotions for Imam Hussein are something else. No. That's not how it works. Here, Amr bin Al-As says, listen, Muawiyah, we're dead. We are done. What you want to do? This is what you got to do. Qur'ans on the spears. Put Qur'ans on the spears and took those spears up so that the army of Ali sees it. There are some in this army that are younger. There are some that are more emotional. When they see the Qur'ans go up, and we let them know through these Qur'ans going up, that we are also a people of the Qur'an. Come to yourselves, O army of Ali. Come to yourselves. You're fighting a bunch of Muslims. You're killing a bunch of Muslims. Let this Qur'an be the judge between us. And that's what Muawiyah orders to be done. Qur'ans go up on the spears. And the people see this, and they say, wait a minute. They come to themselves as if. And they're like, wait a minute. We're fighting a bunch of Muslims. And they're saying, we want peace, enough bloodshed. Ali is surrounded by these people. Thousands, they say. Thousands. Surround Ali ibn Abi Talib. They say, tell Malik to come back and retreat. And Ali says, sees that he has no choice, alayhi salam. He sees he has no choice. Malik, come back. Sends messages to Malik to come back. Now it's interesting here that Malik, for the first time you see him, kind of, not questioning, but you know, making sure and verifying. He tells the messengers to go back to Ali ibn Abi Talib and say, listen, we're almost done, it's over. Islam will be rid of all, is about to be rid of all of the problems that it's going to face in the future till today that we're having still. Just give us a little bit of time. They come back, Ali says, no, they're going to kill me. They're going to kill me, and if I die, it's going to get worse. Malik has no choice but to retreat. This close to taking care of Muawiyah, Bani Umayyah would have been done. There would have been no Ashura, probably. Because the people messed up. They come back, they say, yes, we have to have the Qur'an judge between us. Why are we shedding blood? Why are we fighting like this? And they cite verses of the Qur'an for this. If two groups of the mu'mineen fight each other, then go and have people go in between and figure out what's wrong and, you know, solve the problem and all kind of stuff like that. So arbitration has to happen now. Muawiyah has to choose someone from his side to go. Ali ibn Abi Talib has to choose someone from his side to go. They have to sit down, these two representatives, and decide, according to the Qur'an, what these two groups of Muslims have to do. Step number 6 is this. Ali is forced to take up this offer of tahkim. So each group goes back to their homes again. They go back. They go to Sham. Imam Ali goes back to Kufa. And this arbitration later on takes place. And this is the part I want you to pay attention to. And once again, we have the story of Adalat al-Sahaba. They send their representatives. They go to the meeting point, wherever it was. It's this name that I always forget. And these two sit down. Who are the representatives of these two parties? Number one, Muawiyah, his representative, of course. It's going to be Amr bin Al-As. Amr bin Al-As, this mastermind, that I don't know how he got it. Him and Muawiyah together, tag team, oh my God. I mean, these guys were good. And nothing would hold them back. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he says, Muawiyah is not smarter than me. Because some people ask, who's smarter? And this is in Nahj al-Balagha, if I'm not mistaken. Ali ibn Abi Talib says, Muawiyah is not smarter than me. He just doesn't have any restraints. He doesn't have any red lines holding him back. That's why he will also deceive and use trickery. I, Ali ibn Abi Talib, can't do that. Or else I can read his hand, everything he's doing before he wants to do it. But what can I do? That I can't act like him. The ends in Islam don't justify the means. And we have many examples of that as well. In the story of Muslim, how he could have killed bin Ziyad by ambushing him. But since this person, Ibn Ziyad, was the guest of that person's home, he didn't ambush. And we have other stories like that. How Ali ibn Abi Talib did not cut off the water from Muawiyah's camp, although they cut the water off of him, off of his camp, and so on. So what happens in this arbitration? They come together. Imam Ali, who is his representative? A person by the name of Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. Now, he's a Sahabiyun Jaleelun. You can even go on Arabic Wikipedia and you'll see it. Sahabiyun Jaleel. Even Wikipedia knows that he's a Sahabiyun Jaleel. Not that I do my research off of that, I'm just saying. So, who is Abu Musa al-Ash'ari? I'll just give you one little story about him. Just to get an idea, brothers and sisters, of what's actually happening, what the real deal is on the ground. And how now we're sitting here 1400 years later saying, oh my God, if anyone's a Sahabi, that means everything about them is good. Everything about their intention is good. No, every Sahabi is different. We have to see how they lived. Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, about him, they say, he was the governor of Basra. And one of those days in Uthman's time, he comes out and he's telling the people, encouraging the people. It was a time of war, apparently, expanding the Muslim empire. And he comes out to the people and he delivers like a very fiery and epic speech about how jihad and fighting in the way of God and stuff like that, how important it is and how many rewards and significance and all of that kind of stuff. There are people there who say, we don't have the means for transportation to fight. We don't have horses or mules or whatever, or camels. We don't. What do we do? And then he starts delivering another speech about how important it is if you don't have means of transportation to go by foot. To the extent that they say, and this is in Ibn Athir, the tariq of Ibn Athir, the history of Ibn Athir, Sunni. They say that it reached the point that those who did have transportation, they did something so that their horses would run off so they could also achieve this status of going to battle in the way of Allah on foot. Okay, so now what happens? Recite the salawat. What happens is, now Abu Musa comes out to also go and be a part of this army. Ibn Athir narrates that when he came out, not only did he come out, but 40 mules came out with him. On these mules was his personal wealth, personal belongings. 40 mules of wealth. Come on. I mean, come on. Doesn't this spark something in us? Does this not arouse some curiosity, some criticism and questioning? Like, okay, we understand you're a Sahabi, but if you're running the show and you're stacked till 40 mules stacked of wealth. But no, he's a Sahabi, you're not allowed to question. This is the question that the Shia school poses. How realistic is it to look at things like this? He comes out, some people who didn't have a means of transportation for the battlefield, they said, let us ride some of these mules that, you know, are extra. And he says, get away, he takes out his whip, he starts swinging at the people, and the people run off and stuff. They go to Medina, and they complain to Uthman, and Uthman replaces him, takes him out. Takes Abu Musa al-Ash'ari out. What else has he done? In the Battle of Jamal, he's the governor of Kufa. Imam Ali comes, goes for the Battle of Jamal, and now he's sitting there telling the people, don't go for battle. This is a fitna. This is disunity. This is causing bloodshed. We're not going to get involved. Okay, the slogan is a good one. But what's Ali ibn Abi Talib supposed to do? Not fight? Let them just go on and just destroy Basra and torture people? They were torturing people. Mutilating people. Those people that Ali ibn Abi Talib, as the rightful Khalifa, had appointed in Basra. This is what they're doing. No, don't fight. Okay. And that, it hurts when you read in the books that they say, those who stayed away from battle, they were with the truth. Ali was closer to the truth. Those who stayed away from battle, like Abu Musa, they were on the truth. Now all of a sudden Abu Musa goes higher than Ali ibn Abi Talib. This is Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. What does he do now? He's sitting, now this, look at the simpleness. He's sitting with who? Amr bin al-As. That is not a fair fight. So they come to the conclusion, Amr bin al-As, I mean, hats off to this guy. They come to the conclusion that we are going to remove both of these individuals from power. Muawiyah goes, Ali ibn Abi Talib goes, a third person comes. There are still some Sahaba that could do that. For example, Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, the father of Umar ibn As-Sa'd. He's still alive. He's one of the 10 granted paradise, right? He's a Sahabiyun, great Sahabi. We'll put him, for example, or someone else, whoever. That's a good idea. Very good. Pat on the back. Let's go and announce the results that we have now come to. They go. Now here, this is the part that hurts. This is step 6. They want to go up on the minbar and say what they want to say. Two people can't go on the minbar together. And one of them goes and then the other one has to go after. Here, Amr says, you go up. Abu Musa says, no, you go up. All these formalities. No, you go up. No, after you. You go and make your announcement that you're putting Muawiyah aside, and then I'll say Ali ibn Abi Talib has to go aside. Anyway, now Abu Musa, you're older and you're a Sahabiyun Jaleel. I became Muslim. Amr bin al-As came Muslim 7th or 8th after Hijrah. Yeah? So, you go. You were with the Prophet from the beginning. What happens? Eventually, Abu Musa is the one who goes up first to make his announcement. And they say, he goes up and he says, I am removing Khilafah and Wilaya from who? Ali ibn Abi Talib, the same way I took this ring off. Not this ring, but you know. And he comes down. Probably all happy that I did it. Now, Amr bin al-As goes up. He says, now that he has taken the Khilafah off and he was representing Ali ibn Abi Talib, I am taking it just like this ring and putting it on my finger to represent the Khilafah of Muawiyah bin Abi Sufyan. Step 6 is here. Step 6 is this arbitration. But it was really a betrayal of the Qur'an. They were supposed to rule, decide and judge by the Qur'an. They decided like this. That's why Ali ibn Abi Talib, he never gave in to this. He said the condition was that you are going to judge by the Qur'an. What kind of judgment is this? Taking it from both of them? You're not even allowed to do that. So they go back now. Now what's happening here? The people's minds, what happens in their minds? By the time you come and try to explain that, oh my God, this guy lied and all that, it's over, man, it's over. They say right there, when Abu Musa al-Ash'ari noticed what happened to him and how he was betrayed like that, what does he say? He starts calling, they start calling each other names. He says to him, donkey, he says to him something else. And they start fighting and they come down. Thanks a lot, Abu Musa, for not having a little bit of insight. This is the arbitration. Now, who had forced all of this? The Khawarij, they later became Khawarij. Amir al-Mu'mineen's companions, his army, some of his army. They had also forced him to choose Abu Musa as his representative. Imam Ali didn't want to choose him as his representative. There's a reason why I'm explaining in depth here, because this has a lot to do with Ashura and why Ashura happened. This was that final blow maybe. That was that main stone that was in the way of this tree growing out of the ground. It was taken away with this arbitration by our own people. The Ummah, the Muslim Ummah again messed up. Luck, Muawiyah. The only thing he did was he picked Amr As to do the dirty work for him. This is what happens. Ali ibn Abi Talib has to go back now. And then now, those same people who forced Ali to choose this person to represent him and arbitration, and he had to give in to all of that, these same people now, they notice that, yeah, that doesn't make sense. Muawiyah and Ali ibn Abi Talib, none of them are Khalifa anymore. What are you talking about, Ali? You're the Khalifa. What are you talking about? This is not a judgment by the book. He says, I know, that's not a judgment by the book. No, they say, no. Tell Abu Musa that, you know, it doesn't count. This didn't count. This doesn't count. He says, no, we can't do that now. We told them that we're going to go by it. We have to go by it. No. He says, listen, awfu bil uqud. The Quran says, when there's a deal that's made, you got to live up to it. We can't breach it until the time comes that we can go to battle again. But we can't do anything about it now. They say, no. Ali, you've become kafir. This is where the Khawarij come into play. I don't want to talk about Khawarij that much and the Battle of Nahrawan because it doesn't have that much to do with Bani Umayyah. Siffin was what kind of finished the job for them. The problem here though is that how it does help Bani Umayyah is these Khawarij, when they broke off and they were in Medina, excuse me, in Kufa, and causing trouble and making noise and all of that, and Ali ibn Abi Talib has to waste his time on these people, explaining to them, and they're not listening, causing trouble, and eventually start killing people and assassinating people. Now, Imam Ali's energy has to go fighting them. And he kills all of them except for like 10 of them. Thousands. They were in the thousands. Different reports, but they were in the thousands. At most 16,000, I think, the reports say. So, all this energy that Ali has, his people have, his army has to go for this. Not only that, it's because of these Khawarij that Ali ibn Abi Talib becomes shaheed and he's killed. Muawiyah is so happy. Because of a mistake in Siffin, step number 6, Nahrawan takes place, the Battle of Nahrawan, and Ali ibn Abi Talib is killed in the mihrab because of a mistake that one of his companions or one of the Sahabis of the Prophet made. Now, to see why Muawiyah hates Imam Ali so much, I'm going to read a little bit from Nahjul Balagha for you. Now that we're kind of hyped up and the adrenaline is pumping. This is khutbah, or this is a letter, I don't remember. I think it's letter 10, yes. Letter 10, in the letters of Nahjul Balagha, you can read it. It's a famous one. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he puts his finger on what the problem with Muawiyah is, and it has to do with what I said before. Ahqad Khaybariyah, Badriyah, Hunayniyah, those grudges, that struggle for power, and how Bani Hashim took it through the Prophet, he points this out. And look at what he says to Muawiyah. Bear with me, let's read this. You have called me to war. We're in Siffin here. He's talking about Siffin. Better to leave the people on one side. I love this letter, by the way. I love this letter. It makes me so proud of who I am. I mean, who I follow. Better to leave the people on one side, Muawiyah. Stop coming with people. If you really want to talk stuff, leave the people on one side. Come out to me and spare both the parties from fighting, so that it may be known who of us has a rusted heart and covered eyes. In other words, me and you one-on-one. I am Abu al-Hasan who killed your grandfather, your brother and your uncle. When? In Badr. By cutting them to pieces on the day of Badr. The same sword is with me, and I meet my adversary, that's you, with the same heart that killed your ancestors. This is what Muawiyah has a problem with. Remember how I said Imam Ali had to do the dirty work? Ahqad Badriya. Badri grudges. Animosity. I have not altered the religion nor put up any new prophet. I am surely treading on that very highway. Now look at this. Of course, most of those who revere Muawiyah, they will not accept this. But look at what Imam Ali says here. I am surely treading on that very highway or path, which is Islam, which you had willingly forsaken and then adopted perforce when the Prophet came and took over Mecca. Yeah? In one paragraph, destroy. Destruction derby of Muawiyah. You think you have come out seeking to revenge Uthman's blood. Certainly you know that how Uthman's blood was shed. If you want to avenge it there. The people in Sham had something to do with it apparently. It is as though I see that when war is cutting you with its teeth, you cry like camels crying under a heavy load. And it is as though I see your party bewildered by the incessant striking of swords, occurrence of death, and falling of bodies after bodies. And that's what happened in Siffin. But it's unfortunate that we messed up again. Our own people, our own ummah messed up. All luck. Little bit of skill by Muawiyah. Okay, now here I want to talk about some stuff, some intra-faith dialogue again that we're going to have that I find to be very important, although we're probably going to be running short on time already, but I'm going to go on a little bit longer because we're starting late these nights. When you look into what our brothers from Ahl Sunnah say regarding the Battle of Nahrawan, Now, once again, you got extreme views and you got more moderate views. Battle of Nahrawan, they will go all out. They will go all out, destroying the image of Nahrawan and the Khawarij. How dare they stand up in front of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib? How dare they do this? How dare they do that? Yes, la'natullah alayhim, this, that, they're going to hell, all of them. The Prophet had said it, this, that. Alright, very well, very good, very good. What's the difference between this army standing, this is our question now, the difference between this army standing in the face of Ali ibn Abi Talib and Safin standing in the face of Ali ibn Abi Talib? What's the difference? Except that in Siffin, the reports say 70 to 150,000 died, which is so much more than Nahrawan. What's the difference? You keep digging and probing and looking, and all you find is that Muawiyah was a Sahabi. That's all you find out. And that he was after Uthman's blood, retaliating for that. That's all you find. That's it? Really? This is where we have a major question. Come on. Nahrawan is happening right after Safin. Same thing. These are just young people. Not all of them, of course, but they usually, this is what they say. They say they were Jadidul Asnan or Qasirul Asnan or whatever the word was, I forget, which means that their sin, their ages were young. They didn't have an understanding of Quran, although they recited it better than everybody. Their foreheads had thick, coarse skin like that of the knee of the camel because of the amount of sajda they would do. But they didn't have basira, they didn't have understanding, they didn't have tafaqquh fid din and deep understanding of religion. That was their problem. It sounds so right what they say, but it applies exactly to Safin as well. No. They didn't. The Nahrawanis, they didn't have any sahabi in them. That's why we're going to go all out on them. Really? Is that does not make sense. I haven't said this over these nights, but I'm going to say that doesn't make sense. I give up. I'm tired. How many nights have we been giving examples of how this question is out there? If the deed, if the amal is bad, then it's bad. Finished. Just because a sahabi did it doesn't make it right. Remember the story of Amr bin Hamid al-Khuza'i who killed Uthman? Remember that? Those of us who were here? Same thing applies here. Two battles, identical almost, because they're in the face of the rightfully chosen Khalifa of the time. But no, this one's okay, that one's not okay. They loved each other very much in Safin. I said this a few nights ago, remember? That they, in Safin, they're fighting in the daytime, but they know that they love each other. And at nighttime, they're meeting up. The army of Muawiyah, the army of Ali ibn Abi Talib, they were meeting each other at night, hugging and kissing, talking about each other. What's going on, you know, stuff like that. But in the daytime, they're fighting each other again. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. These are our questions. Why? Because there's Sahaba involved. Once again, we don't have problems with Sahaba. As a matter of fact, the default with Sahaba is, inshallah, that they're good people. We don't have problems with this title. They make us look like we have trouble with this title. But because certain Sahaba are not revered by us because of their actions, we are labeled as anti-Sahabi. No, we're not. As a matter of fact, we don't even say the word Sahabi. We say Ashab because they also admit that there is no hadith that talks about Suhbah, Sahabi. We have Ashab, we don't have Sahabi. So who's the real, who tries to be the real Ahlus Sunnah? Try to be, take up the tradition and Sunnah of the Prophet. These things have to be looked at and understood by the brothers in our Sunday school, in the Sunday school of thought. And as I said, they will have answers and we have to take those as well and discuss. The Ahlul Bayt tried their best to get rid of this Bani Umayyah, this tree that is sprouting now. It's gonna exponentially grow. So Ali ibn Abi Talib, Siffin happens, he tries, it didn't work. Alright, fine. After Nahrawan, he wants to go again, an army is put together. But he is struck by Ibn Muljam alayhi la'na wal adab. And this army can't go. This army can't go. And Imam Ali eventually loses his life. What does Hassan ibn Ali alayhi salam do? He takes up the role of commander. He wants to now go against Muawiyah. We better get rid of this tree that's just growing more and more. We're running out of space in the back. I'm going to ask for a salawat and inshallah move forward, brothers. And the sisters, if that's the case. So the Ahlul Bayt tried three times to go against Muawiyah, finish the job. It didn't happen. And we'll talk about Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Alhamdulillah, we're making progress. I didn't think we'd be able to finish, but inshallah we'll finish over these last couple nights. So Ali ibn Abi Talib now has become shaheed, and now Hassan ibn Ali becomes Khalifa. Brothers and sisters, I'm going to say something. I want it to be taken in good light. It could be misunderstood, so I want you to pay attention. As you remember, the first night or second night, we categorized the different groups of people when it comes to Madrasatul As-Sahaba, Madrasatul Khulafa, that school of thought that believes in the Khulafa and the Sahaba. We said some of them go up to Yazid. Even Yazid is legitimate. Some go to Muawiyah. Some go, we have problems with Muawiyah. They'll stop at Uthman. Some people will question Uthman, but they will still respect and revere. And there are some that, might even question Uthman. These are very few in number. And then you have those who are anti-Muawiyah. They're a little bit more in number, but still they're a minority. We're going to be fair here. And Yazid, you can say the majority, they don't really like him that much. The least they say is that don't say he's a good person, but just don't say he's a bad person either, which that also we have lots of questions about. Now the question here is directed towards those who say Muawiyah even was problematic. Why? Because he started a monarchy. How dare you give Khilafah to your son? Okay? We're happy with this group that they understand Muawiyah. They go to the sources, they see that the sources are speaking to them. Of Ahlul Sunnah, these Sunnah ulama, they see this, and that's why they take Muawiyah down. They don't believe in Muawiyah. But the reasoning they bring for not believing in him applies to Imam Ali alayhi salam as well. If you're going to take someone down, have the right reasoning, or else that will come back to haunt you somewhere else if your reasoning is wrong. What's your reasoning? They will tell you that one of the reasons is because he started a monarchy. Well, some people right there will say, well, how come then Ali ibn Abi Talib, when he passed away, those of you who believe in him, that Hassan ibn Ali, his son, came? In other words, you better fix the reason why you don't believe in Muawiyah, or else it will come to haunt you, or else you won't have an answer when they question you. It's not about us being emotional. Oh, alhamdulillah, you don't like Muawiyah anymore. Fine, we're good. We're good. We're on the same page. Yeah, we're on the same page. But that page is being torn out of the book. It's no good. This is one of those things that we have to be careful about. Just because someone believes in the same thing doesn't mean that it's going to help them all the way. Of course, heaven and hell is none of our business. That's Allah. They have their reasoning. If it's convincing to them, we don't know how Allah will deal. But we're just saying this in this life. You have to be careful how you apply the reasoning. So Hassan ibn Ali alayhi salam, he takes over and he wants to go now fight. What's the situation during Imam Hassan's time? We've all heard this part of history more. I'm going to try to rush through it as much as I can. Situation goes like this. Muawiyah is in power now. Hassan ibn Ali is not as old as Muawiyah. Muawiyah is a grand sahabi. Hassan ibn Ali was like 10 years old maybe, 8 years old, 7 years old, 5 years old, I don't remember. 7, 8 years old maybe when the Prophet passed away. But Muawiyah was a full-grown man and he was Katibul Wahi. He was Khalul Mu'mineen, the brother of Habiba, all these things, right? So in a sense you could say now Muawiyah has the upper hand amongst the people. That's on one side. Muawiyah has gotten stronger and stronger. Bani Umayyah, that tree is growing. Imam Hussein, get ready to chop this tree down in the future, but it's going to cost you. This is on one hand. Okay, Imam Hassan still wants to go fight, but now the people are tired. You got those Khawarij still there in that army. Everyone's worn out. They say that some accounts say that even Imam Hassan, when he's walking amongst the ranks of his army, he gets shot by an arrow by his own people. Alhamdulillah, he was wearing armor. Well, that's the situation now we have. Well, no, it doesn't matter. Hassan ibn Ali, you should go and fight, and it doesn't matter if everyone is massacred. Because Imam Hussein went and did the same thing, right? Imam Hussein went on Ashura, everyone was massacred. Why didn't you do that? Same thing, right? No, it's a waste of blood, brothers and sisters, because Muawiyah is not like Yazid. Inshallah, we'll talk about this more later. That being massacred in Muawiyah's time is a mistake. This is important. Yes, Ashura was a massacre. But was it during Muawiyah's time? No, it wasn't. It's not the same thing. It's in Yazid's time. It's a whole different story. That's why Imam Hussein has a letter when they would send Imam Hussein letters from Kufa, not those famous letters. Before Muawiyah even died, they were sending letters to Imam Hussein that we're here for you, we're ready for you. During Muawiyah's time. History records this, and this is the Shia books now. The Imam Hussein said, today is not the time to stand. May Allah bless you. As long as Muawiyah is alive, stay in your homes and don't do anything. This is Muawiyah. He is powerful. He has 20 years now. 10 years during Imam Hassan's time, after Imam Ali. 10 years during Imam Hussein's time. He has 20 years to take care of business. This tree that now has sprouted, quote unquote, Alhamdulillah, I'm going to take care of it more. It's going to grow. This tree will overshadow the tree of Bani Hashim and destroy Bani Hashim. Of course, we're not about tribalism. But Bani Hashim represents the deen, represents Islam and the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi. Step number 7. That big stone was taken away in the arbitration. Step number 7. That little pebble, those pebbles also that might have gone in the way are also shoved aside, which is Imam Hassan alayhi salam. A ceasefire and peace treaty is signed. Why? Imam Hassan's in this situation. Muawiyah with that strength. His own people with that weakness. Now, what am I supposed to do? Massacre? Get killed? My blood will go in vain. It'll be in vain. Why? Because Muawiyah will make it look like it wasn't something that Imam Hassan stood up for. Oh, he got poisoned. Oh, there was a misunderstanding. Oh, he got sick and died. Stuff like that. He knows how to cover it up pretty well, Muawiyah. So what does he do? Both parties join together and they sign this treaty between Imam Hassan and Muawiyah. This tree is finished now. The job of this tree is finished. This tree now is at its fullest. Its strength is unprecedented of Bani Umayyah. Imam Hassan has to give power to Muawiyah. I don't know. I don't want to bore you guys, but the terms and conditions of this peace treaty, I'll rush through them, and then I think I'll probably have to end. Yes, I'll end after this. What happens in this peace treaty? Well, some say don't call it a peace treaty, call it a ceasefire. These are the terms of it. Number one, Muawiyah is in, I have no choice but to sign a ceasefire with you. This is what I offer. And Muawiyah is going to take it. Muawiyah knows that Imam Hassan can't fight him. He can't do that much damage if he's alive. Let's just take this deal. Authority will be handed to Muawiyah, provided that he should act according to the Book of Allah, the Sunnah of the Prophet. That's one. Authority should be for Imam Hassan after Muawiyah. So if Muawiyah dies, Imam Hassan becomes Khalifa. Hello? And if an accident occurs, something goes wrong, Imam Hassan's not alive, it goes to who? It goes to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Muawiyah has no right to entrust authority to anyone else. Did he live up to that? Of course he didn't. Muawiyah should abandon cursing the commander of the faithful and the practice of using the qunut in salat against him. Because Ahlus Sunnah, they have this concept, I saw this somewhere, I don't know exactly how they believe in qunut. But one thing that I have seen them say is that, because they don't do qunut like us in salat, they have it sometimes, but usually they won't do it. A time where it's done is when you are being oppressed, they say. When you're being oppressed, then all five salats you can do it, and you can pray against that person who's oppressing you, the oppressor. So here, Imam Ali is the oppressor, even after he's died. Let's do qunut against him. A'udhu billah. Muawiyah should also not mention Imam Ali unless in a good manner. Did that happen? No. They say Imam Hussein for 20 years was not allowed to deliver Friday sermons. And when he had to go and sit in those Friday sermons and listen to the la'an of his own father in these sermons. This was not fulfilled. Muawiyah should exclude what is in the treasury of Kufa. Okay, this one I'm not going to go through. It has to do with money and how lots of money has to be given to Imam Hassan so that he can use it for whatever purpose is necessary. The people should be safe wherever they are in the earth of Allah. Muawiyah should give security to all races. The companions of Imam Ali should be given security wherever they are, which also didn't happen. It also did not happen. Muawiyah should not seek a calamity secretly or openly for Imam Hassan. No conspiracies against Imam Hassan, nor for Imam Hussein, nor for any of the Ahlul Bayt. All of these things, inshallah, we'll talk about tomorrow night, about how none of these happened. And a false hadith that they've made up about Imam Hassan alayhi salam, and how, what a good thing he did that he signed this ceasefire with Muawiyah. Recite salawat. Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Ya Allah, I don't know what to say, brothers and sisters. Is it a coincidence that tonight, that is the night of Abbas, it's raining? Is it a coincidence? And it's raining so hard. Where was this rain on Ashura? Where was this rain so Abbas didn't have to go for water, so that that would have happened to him after? There's a line of poetry. I haven't said any Farsi poetry these nights, but I'm going to share with you two lines of Farsi poetry here for Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam. I don't know where to start, brothers and sisters. When you reach Ali al-Akbar, when you reach Qasim, when you reach Abbas, you don't know what to do. You want to do justice, you can't. It's as if this pain has to stay here, brothers and sisters, forever. For Abbas, you go to the haram of Imam Hussein, you want to destroy yourself, but you can, you're just sitting there. Either you have to look at the haram, maybe shed some tears. Oh Hussein, let me do justice for you in your tragedy. When I'm looking at your haram, when I'm visiting you, what do I do to do justice? You can't do justice. You just have to watch on and just be in shock. It's as if they're keeping us like this. Let us die for you. Hussein will say, no, no, I died for you. You don't have to die for me. Just listen to our commands. Listen to us. Be good Shia for us. Listen to our representatives. There's a two lines of poetry that goes like this. It says, Yadam zivafaye ashja'un nasayat. Vazdideye taram sudeye almasayat. I remember the bravery and the courage of Ashja'un Nas, the loyalty of Ashja'un Nas, the loyalty of the most courageous of people, which is Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. And from my eyes come down and pours diamond dust. He doesn't call it tears, diamond dust pours for Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. Agar ayad bejahan Hussein digari hayhat baradari chun Abbas ayat. If there is going to be another Hussein to come to this world, which is Imam Sahib al-Zaman, inshallah, another Hussein is going to come. Oh Allah, let us see that day when he comes and avenges the death of his grandfather Hussein. When he comes and he leans against the Kaaba and he says, Ala ya ahl al-alam, inna jaddi al-Hussein qataluhu atshana. Oh people of the world, and they say that everyone will understand when he says this, and everyone will hear in the world. You're starting your mission, oh Sahib al-Zaman, with your grandfather Hussein. They killed my grandfather with a thirsty mouth. If another Hussein is to come to this world, which is Sahib al-Zaman alayhi salam, hayhat, never, never will a brother like Abbas come again. When Sahib al-Zaman comes, yes, Prophet Isa is going to be with him. But who can compare these two? Another Abbas is never to come again, brothers and sisters. Don't even try waiting to see him. You might see another Hussein, but you will never see another Abbas. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he married Ummul Banin for this day apparently, just so that there's an Abbas. If there's no Abbas, things won't happen the way they're supposed to happen on Ashura. And I don't know what it is with Abu al-Fadl Abbas that you find contradictions in him. He's the standard bearer of the army, yet he has no arms. He brings water for the children, yet he doesn't take a sip himself when he goes in the Furat. There's so many contradictions in Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. Qamar ibn Hashim, so beautiful, but when he falls to the ground, his face, you can't see, is covered in blood of his eye. All of these contradictions, Ya Abul Fadl al-Abbas. Your name is Abbas, the frowning one. You wouldn't speak to people in Medina. You know what happened in Medina with Fatima al-Zahra. You're not going to speak to these people. He's the frowning one. Yet the children all love him. When Abbas comes, the children rush around him. The time came on Ashura when no one was left. The sound of Al-Atash is all over the place. Children, Al-Atash, Al-Atash, we are thirsty. At the same time, Hussein is sitting, they say, in a corner, waiting. Abbas comes to Hussein, he says, لَقَدْ ضَاقَ صَدْرِي. Oh brother, do you give me permission to go now? It's gonna have to happen. I have to go. My heart is being squeezed. I'm being smothered. I can't breathe. Let me go. He had sent his brothers before, only to see them killed in front of him. Abul Fadl Abbas. Oh Hussein, do you let me go? So now Abbas, you're telling Hussein this. And then Hussein says, how can I let you go? You're the standard bearer. If the standard bearer goes, that means the army is done. It's finished. It's over. But at the same time, the children are saying, Al-Atash, Al-Atash, there's a problem here. Hussein, what is he supposed to do? Do I say yes to Abbas? What about these children? They say Sakina comes with a water sack and she solves the problem. Says, oh uncle, can you bring us some water? Thank you, Sakina, for solving the problem. Abbas, I'm not going to say go fight. Can you bring some water for these children? I'm not that much into dreams, but there is this dream that I do believe in. They had seen Abbas in a dream once, wearing armor. He's ready to fight. What's going on? What's wrong, Abbas? He said, I wasn't able to do what I wanted to do. I personally think this is one of Abbas's tests that he has been preparing himself for 35 years for this day, but he's not able to do what he wanted to do. That's what Allah does when He loves somebody. He'll make sure they grow as much as they can. Abbas, can you get some water? Abbas doesn't even think twice. Yes, my master. Anything you say. And he goes. Abbas, don't go because these children will never see you again. He fights his way to the Farat, to the Sharia. He goes in, exhausted, panting. The horse is panting. This cool water is running by the feet of Abbas. He feels the cold water in his hands. Brothers and sisters, can you hear the waves of the Furat as they pass? And Abbas looks down onto this clear water. He fills the water sack. They say he takes some water up as if to drink. فَذَكَرَ عَطَشَ الْحُسَيْنِ. He pours the water onto the water. He puts the water sack in front, he goes back towards the tents. Brothers and sisters, this is the part where the life of Abbas lies in the water sack being protected. Remember this. The water sack is everything. Abbas is no more. I don't care about my life. This has to be protected. Abbas starts going through the palm trees so that the enemy can't get close to him in the water sack. But these enemies are cowards. They hide behind these palm trees as Abbas is going. They strike his right arm. All of a sudden you hear someone saying, Wallah, in qata'tumu yamini, inni uhami abadan an dini. You take my right arm, it doesn't matter. I will stand for my deen. I will stand for Hussein. He continues. The left arm falls down. He's holding the water sack in his teeth. Maybe he's thinking to himself, it doesn't matter. The water sack is protected. But all of a sudden, an arrow lands onto the water sack. This water starts leaving the water sack. The soul of Abbas is leaving his body. What is Abbas to do? I can't fight anymore, no arms. I don't have water for the children. I'm a disgrace. I've let them down. I never let them down. What do I do? This is where Allah comes to the help of Abbas. Brothers and sisters, are you ready? The moon of Bani Hashim wants to set. What do I do when arrow lands on the eye of Abbas, they say? If a thorn goes in your eye, you cannot bear the pain. Abbas has to stop to pull this arrow out. But he has no hands. He has to bend over and put the arrow between his knees. As he is pulling on this arrow, an iron rod comes down on the head of Abbas. Abbas begins to fall to the ground. But Abbas has no hands to protect his face. He does not have hands to break his fall. Like our mother Fatima, who fell face first onto the ground, Abbas falls to the ground face first. Oh, what a tragedy for Hussein. This is where the famous line is heard by Abbas. Ya akha, adrik akha. Oh my brother, come to your brother in these final moments. If I have never called you my brother, it was out of respect, but these final moments are different. Let me be close to you for once, my dear brother Hussein. Let me be intimate with you for once. Ya akha, adrik akha. Hussein comes to the body of Abbas. What have they done to you? What have they done to your beautiful eyes, my brother? Let me take you back to the tents, oh my brother. But this is where Abbas says, no, Hussein, leave me here. What good am I anymore for Sakina and the children? Imagine, oh my brothers and sisters, how Hussein had to leave the body of Abbas and go back to the camp. These monsters came. These monsters came and did whatever they could to the body of Abbas. Where are the arms of Abbas? Where is the head of Abbas? Oh, Lady Zainab, get yourself prepared to be prisoner. There is no more Abba. Oh, children, get ready to be slaughtered. There is no Abba. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Al-Ali al-Azim. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. Brothers and sisters, this time is a time that dua is accepted. With those du'as in mind, we call on Allah. نَسْأَلُكَ اللَّهُمَّ وَنَدْعُوكَ بِاسْمِكَ الْعَظِيمِ الْعَظَمِ الْعَزِّ الْأَجَلِّ الْأَكْرَمِ يَا اللَّهُ 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 يَا مُقَلِّبَ الْقُلُوبِ ثبت قلوبنا.